You know, being in New York has been such a treat. You know, getting to play 3 weeks at the New Victory Theater. One of the biggest treats is that I get to speak with a survivor. I mean, a genuine survivor, not of the Holocaust, but maybe something a little bit worse. The creation of the musical Spider-Man. My guest, Ken Marks, today, a survivor. Ken, how have you done it?
I have survived by keeping my nose to the grindstone, Austin. Don't look up. There might be a falling Spider-Man right above your head.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 259, Backstage at Spider-Man. The New Victory Theater in New York City, where we played The Complete World of Sports Abridged for 3 weeks earlier this fall, is on 42nd Street, right next to the Foxwood Theater, home to the infamous musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Now, chances are that if you listen to this podcast, you already know that Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark was written and directed by Julie Taymor, with music by Bono and The Edge from U2, and that the musical had many false starts and extended previews and delayed openings and backstage accidents of actors falling from wires and injuries and that Julie Taymor was ultimately let go or fired or asked to resign from the production by the producers. Now, the stage doors for the New Victory Theater and for the Foxwood Theater are on 43rd Street, only about 30 yards apart from each other, and this gave me the opportunity to bump into my old friend and summer stock colleague, Ken Marks. Now, Ken created the role of Uncle Ben, who famously tells Peter, Spider-Man Parker, that with great power comes great responsibility. And Ken sat down to talk with me about the dangers and the adventure of not only surviving the huge technical spectacle that is the physical production of Spider-Man, but the creation of the musical as well.
And there was one evening where, this is when we were still doing Spider-Man version 1.0, and the curtain comes down, we would do this little sort of almost a prologue where we would be screaming this song and Spider-Man would be running the bridge and we were all going, ha, 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 and the girls would be singing this thing. And the curtain came down and all of a sudden you see the hand of the Green Goblin reach out, and the curtain came down and snapped the hand off the Green Goblin puppet or whatever it was, and it came crashing down and we all had to sort of get out of the way as the thing came down.
Oh my God!
We were haunted. That whole experience was haunted.
Talk me through the experience as much as you can. I mean, you're a veteran. Yeah. We know each other from summer stock days back in the '80s. But you're a Broadway veteran. You did Mamma Mia for 18 years, or
I did Mamma Mia for a year. Yeah. I did my first Broadway play was doing Dancing at Lunasa. I took over for the Irish company and played the narrator Michael in that. Tony Award-winning, fantastic production of Dancing at Lunasa, and did Hairspray, and
With George Wendt,
and then the last 2 months with Harvey, which was unbelievably great.
Wow.
Yeah, really great. Closing the show with Harvey was a huge thrill. And I've done Rock and Roll, the Tom Stoppard play that was here a couple years ago, directed by the great Trevor Nunn, and also... whatever, you know, my resume. Yeah. I did Pleasant Laughter with Frank Langella, which was a terrific.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, and we can IBDD you.
Yeah, so, yeah. So don't worry about that.
How did you get involved with Spider-Man to begin with? Did you know it was going to be such a huge thing, or was it just like, oh, here's a gig?
It was here's a gig. You hear about Spider-Man, but I'm not on the musical radar so much. I've done a couple, but went in, auditioned for Julie, you know, sang... Bring in a rock song, so I sang "Sweet Caroline," a Neil Diamond song. And
now you're not a musical guy, but you had heard of Bono and the Edge, right?
I had heard of Bono and Edge, and there were a couple of songs. Though, ask me the names, I wouldn't be able to tell you. You know, "With or Without You," I think is one of the ones I know. But heard of Bono and Edge, and went out and sang the song for Julie, and she grooved on that, and suddenly there I was playing Uncle Ben. I mean, there was no callback or anything. It was quite late. A lot of people that were in the original company were there for 2 years already waiting for this thing to go.
Right.
And, you know, I was talking with someone the other day about how incredibly exciting those first days and weeks were. How we were all just so thrilled to be there, to be in the room with Julie, who's an inspirational, magnetic, marvelous weaver of stories and ideas. She's just incredible. And how all of us were so excited to be part of it. Right. And how over a period of 10 months, which is essentially how long we did the thing before we actually opened, a whole different version, that we went from this incredible euphoric high to essentially being like we'd been kicked and pummeled and buried alive and then dug out and kicked and pummeled some more and then buried and then pissed upon.
By Julie or just by events
just
and the critics
the whole
and the public?
World? You know, I say to people, you know, they say, well, how's Spider-Man going? I say, well, you know, now that we're no longer the laughing stock of the world, it feels better.
Right.
You know,
right.
At the same time, it's we're a little, you know, we're not in the news cycle anymore, which is a little bit, a little bit, you know, disappointing. For example, I fell down the stairs at Spider-Man about 6 weeks ago. I didn't tell you this. I fell down the stairs and twisted my ankle very, very badly, like partial ligament tear, and they had to, you know, immediately. Wrap it, and you know, they're someone handing me Chris Tierney's crutches, the Spider-Man who fell, and they were his crutches, and they gave them to me and ice and all this, and
oh my God.
Suddenly then everyone was gone, and I was out into the Times Square at 10:30 at night on a Thursday looking for a cab because my ankle was so swollen I couldn't get on the subway, I couldn't walk. And there I was sort of walking up and down 43rd Street looking for a cab, but there was no one to take a photograph of me and put me on the cover of the New York Post.
Right.
Another casualty, another statistic.
Exactly. Now there's a great story. There's Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Uncle Ben, you know, on crutches.
Yeah.
And I was completely ignored, and I'm not quite over that yet.
No, clearly not. It's clearly an open wound. With great power comes the need for crutches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Well, and it disappoints us because, you know, Spider-Man used to be, as professional comedians, you know, used to be a go-to punchline. Oh, yeah. It's not quite so much anymore.
Not so much. No.
So you must be doing something wrong or right, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. The show is a lot of fun to play now. It's very, very different from, certainly from, talking about what it was going to be in those first weeks and what it was even 6 months into it. It's very different, although many of the more wonderful elements of Julie's show still remain intact, but it's a very, very different piece now.
Well, you talked a little bit about Julie and the spell that she weaves in a rehearsal hall. What are Bono and Edge like? What was it like? Well, I mean, did you have much interaction with them? Does Uncle Ben have any songs?
No, he should have a song, gosh darn it. He should have a song.
Absolutely.
Oh, my boy, Peter, who's not actually my boy. He's my brother's boy.
With great power.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. A power and responsibility ballad.
That BMI workshop really paid off.
Didn't it? It really did.
I can feel it. We didn't have all that much... you know, some people had done a lot of readings with Bono and Edge, working on the music. I was not one of those guys. Uncle Ben does not have a song, but I do a lot of the ensemble singing. So there was a lot of singing there. But, you know, they were gone. If you can look it up, they were gone for the first X amount of months.
They were on tour.
They were on tour. So they didn't actually see us until, you know, get serious about it until January, after we'd already been in rehearsal for almost 5 months.
January of this year, of 2011. Yeah.
So once they came in, then little by little, the Titanic that was Spider-Man began to try to make a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, and what was that like? So, I mean, yes, you're the laughing stock or when you're in the news all the time. What was it like trying to take this big behemoth where you had spent so much time working with this director and now you were suddenly had a new creative team, new director with changes to the script? You called it Spider-Man 1.0.
Yeah.
So how hard was that?
Well, on some level, it was the easiest thing I've ever done because those of us in the company that had been there from the beginning were so eager to at least do something.
Yeah.
and we had played out version 1.0, and we played it, I think, towards in the last month of the show, it was playing beautifully. I mean, in a way, I think we got close to what Julie's vision was mm-hmm. in that last month, because we were all just kind of going for it, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was like, it was nuts, literally, and we were hitting places and, you know, getting in touch with emotions and energy that I think that she was really pushing for and couldn't quite get it all together. So when that was finished, we'd already begun working. The last month, we were already rehearsing during the day, the new show, yeah. and playing the old show at night, which was incredibly schizophrenic.
Right.
Then we shut down.
Yeah.
And so we had a little time. We had 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Oh my God. You should have seen it. Nobody was like, yeah, sure. 3 weeks. You know, after having, we're going to open next month for sure.
Right.
And then, really, in 2 months. 5 months later, we're closing for 3 weeks.
What the?
So, and we were handed a script that, you know, any professional would go, oh, I see. A to B to C. All the way through the alphabet. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the former script was like A, and then it jumped to R, and then back to L, mm-hmm. and then all the way to Z, and then it went to 4.
Right.
You know, that was the way the other script was.
Right.
And it was a challenge, and I think that we let those kind of quick turns happen to us in that last month that I was mm-hmm. saying. But once we were handed a script that kind of made kind of sense,
yeah.
we were all ready to embrace it and say, fine, if it's at least this, then we'll do it this way. Not that we didn't enjoy the other thing, but right. we were ready with all the drama, with all everything. We wanted to open the show and put it to rest. So we were into it.
Hello, my name's Eric Essex, and they've given me the opportunity to take a second to plug my new record. I'm a contemporary jazz artist with a new album out called Birmingham. You can check me out at www.ericessex.net, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Until December 18th, 2011, you can see us performing the world premiere of our production of The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged at the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. If you can get here, please get your tickets soon. We're being told that tickets are selling faster than any other show here in the last several years. Who knows where we will be performing it next year in 2012. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Ken Marks, who plays Uncle Ben in Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark. As a working professional actor for so many years, and you've come into new shows, you've done new shows, you've come into existing shows, do you allow yourself to have an opinion about, oh, the first version was better, oh, the second version is better, blah, blah, blah? Or do you not have that freedom? Are you, as a working actor, you go, you know what, this is the script in front of me, this is what I do. That one, I'm not doing that one anymore, I'm doing this one now, and I don't think about it. Or, you know what I'm asking?
Well, I think, like yourself, you know, I was telling you, you know, I have some background in improv and all that sort of thing, you know. I do give myself permission, particularly when it's new work, and particularly when it's new work, to say, you know, I think this could be better if I said this line right. and not that line. And indeed, when I was playing Uncle Ben in the first version, which was a minuscule event, which was one of the great surprises of it, was that I had essentially, you know, 4 or 6 lines, and then I got run over by a car. But once I got run over, you know, I'm lying there, Pete. You know, I used to go, Pete, rise above it, or some such thing I would say. I can't quite remember. And I had a whole sort of sense of how it all should work. And in those last few weeks before Julie and the producers parted ways, Julie came downstairs and said, we have to give Uncle Ben more. And I said, well, you know, here's what I'm thinking. if I say this, Pete says this, Aunt May says that, and I say this at the very end, and then I die. So we add these three lines. Uh-huh. And she said, yeah, let's do that. We'll do it tonight. And I love her for that. I love her for that moment. I love her for a lot of moments, but yeah. I love her for that moment because she was like, let's go for it. Let's do it. Like we were doing, you know.
Doing something. A sketch at Second City that night.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's just do it that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, at Spider-Man, there's so much tech involved to sort of say, okay, let's do it that way. Is ballsy because, you know, there's 18 people that got to be informed that right. this thing is going to happen.
Right.
And it did. So, yes, I think, I'm sure there's a lot of kids at the theater that don't allow themselves to kind of think if it's good or it's bad or it's whatever. But I think for the veterans, we were all, you know, I know Patrick Page had, you know, this is the way, he said to me 9 months ago, he said, the way that the show should end the first act is with the death of Dr. Norman Osborn.
Right.
The rise of the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends now. But nobody ever, there was no way to even think that was possible that was going to happen. But
right.
other people were thinking about it. And
well, so, and you're talking, and I know you've got to go. Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear you talk about Julie as not only a master of the spectacular, but also of these small little character moments, too. Because you don't, I have not heard those kinds of stories of Julie Taymor.
Yeah.
And that's, so it's great to hear you say that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I also think that, you know, what Spider-Man did for everybody from low to high was that it humanized us. Because at the beginning it was Bono and The Edge and Julie Taymor, and there we were in the, you know, sort of in the busy, the ants or the, you know, feeding the queen bee and all that stuff. But as the piece went on and the attempts at creation went on, we all had to get down off of our whatever high horse. Not that anyone was on a high horse, but we all had to kind of actually mix it up.
Yeah.
Because there were times in tech where we didn't see Julie for long periods of time because she was so involved with the tech, and we felt estranged from her, and we were just kind of, you know, robotic doing our thing, and nobody was talking to us, and it was very strange. But as we got farther along, and unfortunately, you know, closer to the end of that experience, everyone became very, very human and said, what can we do to make this show better? Aside from all the spectacular, yeah. What can we make, how can we make this show more human?
Yeah.
And that's, like you say, I mean, I didn't hear stories about Julie Taymor directing much anyway, but those were some great times, actually.
Yeah.
As painful as they all were, because we knew things were gonna happen and that somebody was gonna pay.
Right.
Who, how, why, where, when, we didn't, but we all knew it.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your tales of survival via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a Twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Aunt May Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Sarah Slater. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Eric Essex. You heard his version of The First Noel earlier, which comes off his Christmas CD called My Gift to You, and the whole album is just as good. Go to ericessex.net. That's Eric with a C and Essex with an I, ESSIX.net, and buy My Gift to You in time for the holidays now. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 259/777 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Rock and Roll, the Tom Stoppard play that was here a couple years ago, directed by directs all those things.
Sam Mendes?
Starts with a T. Oh, God, this is so humiliating.
Well, I'll cut this part out.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.